Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
Back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. You can't call it the second half of the season. I guess it's the second starting point of the NBA season. It's going to pick up a little bit later on this week. It's not All-Star Weekend anymore either. It's All-Star Week. These guys literally get 7 days off. We'll talk about some of the news coming out of the NBA. I guess we can talk about the All-Star Game somewhat. Joining us right now over the phone, as he does to talk NBA basketball throughout the season, we have James Holis right now over the phone. James, always a pleasure to get you back on.
Greetings from the East Coast.
Yeah, you kind of flipped things up on me today. Now you're on that East Coast time, not that Pacific Standard Time.
Yep, it's already almost 2 in the afternoon, and I'm gearing up for a nap here in a little bit.
Yeah, well deserved. I was talking to you before we came back from that last break. I asked if you watched a second of the All-Star Game. You said no, not at all. And James, I think a lot of NBA fans, at least some of the big NBA fans, probably shared the same sentiment. The game has gotten so watered down. It's not competitive. I don't know if you fix it. I don't know. I don't know. It just seems like it's not fun. It's not entertaining. I don't want to watch Luka Doncic launch 65-footers in something that's supposed to be a game. I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, and it's not quite a new thing, man. I was watching footage there on Twitter of somebody posted when Shaq was doing crossovers and doing pull-ups just for the hell of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's an all-star game, man. And I could definitely see both sides. Sure, they like, you know, Dame is just chucking from half court, but the fans are on and on. So, like, I don't know. I just don't care enough, right? I care more about guys getting healthy and getting a little break in, you know, the run up to the postseason. To me, it's just another, you know, it's another line of demarcation in the season. But you know, yeah, the NBA pumped in a few billion into the project, but the product, let's see how the numbers bear out, and the fans like it. Fans like it. You know, it's not for us diehards. It's not for us sickos. It's for the casual fans.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I thought about over the weekend, the NBA needs better scheduling. And the reason I say this is because it's literally the first weekend without football in this country in months. We get football in August, and it sticks with us until February. And people can like it or not. The NFL is king in this country. Football is king in this country. If it's college football, if it's the NFL, it brings in numbers that the NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, whatever other sport you want to talk about, cannot match. Literally the first weekend without football in this country. And it's not Celtics-Cavs, Celtics-Bucks. It's not Timberwolves, Clippers, Lakers, Nuggets, whatever matchup you want to throw out. We get the All-Star Game. The NBA needs to be better, right? The first opportunity that you have to have the national audience captivated by basketball, you put on a lackadaisical All-Star Game. It's not smart marketing.
Yeah, and like you said, I'm not sure what the answer is as far as the All-Star Game is. It would have been nice to see the Steph versus Sabrina thing in the actual actual three-point contest. I don't know what the answer is, man, but I've pretty much given it up. It doesn't really appeal to me anymore. I don't know how they can make it appeal to me. I don't know how you can make multimillionaires actually care about an exhibition game. So it is what it is, you know?
Hey, correct me if I'm wrong. The All-Star Game was pushed back after the trade deadline. I want to say it was the DeMarcus Cousins deal that kind of caused it. Because remember the Boogie deal with Sacramento and him getting moved to New Orleans? Remember that clouded All-Star weekend? If I'm not mistaken, the NBA strategically pushed the All-Star game back after the trade deadline for that reason alone.
I think you're right. I think it used to be the trade deadline came right after the All-Star game. And, like, come on, he got traded right before the deadline. I don't know what happened, but, yeah, I don't know. Those trade rumors are going around during the All-Star game still about DeMarcus. Yeah, something like that. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe the winners, they get money, don't they? Don't the winners get some kind of money?
Yeah, it's minuscule, though. It's it might be like a grand or something. I mean, it's minuscule. I don't know. The bottom line is it's not entertaining, and now it's over with, and we have a few days without any basketball. When we come back, though, James, here we go. A lot of teams have played 55 games, which means, you know, you do the math, you got 26, 27 games left in the season, so it means that every game from here on out, it counts, it's big. Every single game from here on out is big.
Yes, and that's what I care about, right? Because The seeding is still very much up in the air, other than the Celtics kind of running away from the field. And there's going to be a lot of nice bylines, nice storylines, right? Right now, the Heat look like they might have started to turn the corner. Golden State and the Lakers really seem like they turn it around. So it's this is going to be one of the most interesting stretch runs in years, I think.
Yeah, we'll start with the Western Conference. Minnesota right now with the top, Oklahoma City, the Clippers, and Nuggets. Those teams are not going anywhere. 1-4 to me is pretty much set in the Western Conference, even though there's only a 3-game separation. It's really 5-10 that fascinates me, because on the outside looking into the play-in round would be the Utah Jazz, and I just don't see Utah cracking that. I mean, they're 2.5 back right now of Golden State. I don't think they get any better. You talked about the Warriors and the Lakers turning the corner. For me in the Western Conference, it's 5-10. I think that's what's going to be so interesting to watch. Can the Mavericks, Kings, and Lakers make a push to get inside that top six?
And you're absolutely right. I think the Lakers are surging. The Mavericks have been... they're treading water, and the Kings have kind of been sputtering. So the Kings was the feel-good story last year, and this year they have some absolutely befuddling losses and just stretches where I felt something happen in that locker room. The Mavericks, they just got some reinforcements, so they might be on the upswing here. They brought in some more defensive guys, and that's going to help them a ton. P.J. Washington would fit great there. Again, the Lakers didn't do anything, but continuity seems to kind of finally got – you know, they find their footing, and they have really been surging. So it's going to be a dogfight down the stretch.
Yeah, does Spencer Dinwiddie move the needle for you in L.A. at all?
No, I don't think so. He bolsters, I don't like D'Angelo Russell, but D'Angelo Russell has been playing great. Reeves has been playing, you know, pretty damn well. He's another guy in that kind of mold. He's not a great defender. He's not a great really playmaker for others. He can make shots. He can get to the rim, put some pressure on the rim a little bit when he wants to. Just another guy. I could obviously, Darvin Ham is going to go 3-guard lineups because he loves it. So he's not a particularly great shooter, but I mean he'll help. I don't think he won't hurt. I think he'll help. I guess, especially with Gabe Vincent basically out for the. You know, I haven't heard anything about him. So yeah. I mean, but I think again, it all starts and stops with LeBron and Anthony Davis. Right, they're healthy, and if D'Angelo Russell's making shots, and if Anthony Davis looks like he's an all-world defender again, like he has been at times this year, like they're gonna be a tough out.
Can anyone beat the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference in a 7-game set? I think that's the story for me in the West, James. I know right now they're sitting at the 4 seed. Clippers have looked good. Thunder have looked good. Timberwolves have looked good. We add this conversation all the time, right? The regular season and the postseason are two different things. Can anyone beat the defending champs in a 7-game set in the West?
I remember distinctly last season the Nuggets went through a morass. They had a slog section of the season where people were asking what's wrong with the Nuggets. Are they going to be fine for the playoffs? And it looks a lot like this. The one thing I'm curious about is, are the young guys going to be ready to step in to do the things that Bruce Brown and Jeff Green did last year, which people laughed at me when I said they're going to miss Jeff Green and Bruce Brown because, yeah, they're role players, but they're valuable role players who at times stepped up and made big shots, made big plays. Bruce Brown had a big quarter that kind of saved them a game in the playoffs. Who's going to be those guys now? So that's going to be the real question. Will KCP be healthy down the stretch? We want to give the Nuggets, obviously, they have the benefit of the doubt from experience and the corporate knowledge to do it when they have to, and Joker can just go, you know, next level. But there's a reason that Pat Riley came up with, you know, they know the disease of Moore and how it's such a slog every year to come back and do it, you know, come back for a repeat, how hard it is. Why teams don't normally repeat. It's hard. It's very hard. So fatigue might get them. A battle of attrition in the playoffs might get them. They're one Joker, you know, rolled ankle away from being a 5-game out.
If we hop over to the Eastern Conference, your Boston Celtics have won 6 straight going into the All-Star break. They've also won 8 out of 10. They've developed a 6-game lead, and it's not Milwaukee that's now pushing them. It's Cleveland. Wild enough, right? I mean, the idea of what Milwaukee has done to reconstruct this roster in hopes to contend with Boston. That's the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Celtics seem like they could just go on cruise control over the final 25 games of the season and still have home court throughout.
And let's hope they don't go on cruise control, because I feel like they did that at times last year, and that's why the playoffs were such a rude awakening for them, because I think they kind of got soft. towards the end of the year where the quote-unquote regular season didn't matter. And honestly, I'm probably unnecessarily strict on the Celtics because this has been the most unimpressive six-game win streak I've seen in a while. Because every game they do something that makes me cringe and reminds me of the team that rolled over in the playoffs and got down 0-3 to the Miami Heat. You know, coughing up late leads to the Nets, coughing up late, you know, letting the late 11-point, I think, lead against the Heat. We got Jimmy Butler whittled down to like 4 late. Just stuff like that, man. And that's where I worry about the Celtics. The Celtics have all the tools. They have all the pieces. Like, it's like the old saying when they say a guy makes a $1 million move with a 10-10 finish. Boston has a $1 million piece of equipment, but sometimes they just short-circuit mentally in ways that I don't know if they have the guts to do what it takes.
I kind of feel the same way about Milwaukee. And, you know, you just talked about health, right? If we're talking Lakers, Nuggets, and the idea of the Nuggets losing a role player like a Bruce Brown that, you know, Jeff Green, people look at that and say, well, it's not that big of a deal. When I look at this Milwaukee Bucks team, we've already talked in nauseam about the idea of not having Drew Holiday. They try to fix that. They go out, they get Pat Bev. So they want a guy with a little dog in him on the perimeter, right? If Chris Middleton cannot stay healthy, James, I think it's a huge blow to this Bucks team. I really do. I think he is a piece that they have to have.
Yes, and you're absolutely right, because he is he's already lost a step defensively. He can't stay on the court, and if he can't be offensively, as was made him so dangerous, he was actually kind of the initiator a lot with Giannis, you know, being a finisher and. Megan, you can't just focus on Giannis. Chris Middleton was a big shot taker and maker. Now you got Dame. Dame has been weirdly up and down. Might be a sign of age, right? He's been around. And the defense has really just sprung leaks everywhere. Crowder isn't the same. Chris Middleton, like you said, they have no perimeter defenders. And Brook Lopez, after about a million years, is starting to show his age. He's not defending the rim as well as he did, and he's not making shots. So, a lot of people thought, boom, Dame and Giannis, you could put me and you around them, and all of a sudden they're going to be, you know, a playoff contender. But they lost to the Grizzlies the other day, the hospital Grizzlies, and it wasn't ever seemed like particularly close. They got a lot more issues. You know, the Doc Rivers might have been, I think it might have been one move too many. I think they probably, I don't know if they should have just rolled Griffin out, but that might be, you know, maybe it was there was a no good answer there because Griffin seemed like maybe he lost that locker room. So, yeah, this might be a case of be careful what you wish for because you might get it. They got the upgrade in Dame. They got the new coach. They got all this, and they wanted to move on from, you know, oh, this didn't work in the playoffs. But everything's starting to unravel, it looks like, a little bit for the Bucks.
Where did it become, I guess, the thought in the NBA that if you have a big two or a big three, you're going to win or at least compete for an NBA championship? I think the Denver Nuggets, they proved that wrong, right? We've seen Milwaukee has proved that wrong. I think, for the most part, the Phoenix Suns proved that wrong when they got to the NBA Finals. But there became a stretch in time where that became the thing, right? It's a copycat league. I don't know if this started with the Boston Celtics back in 08. When did this start? Where if you have a big three, you can give up depth pieces. If you have a big three, you have a chance to win it all.
I think you kind of look back historically at teams, right? And you kind of, maybe LeBron and Chris Bosh and Wade crystallized it because they decided to come together so, you know, so blatantly. But it's true. If you have a superstar, top kind of five guy, and you pair him with another guy who's maybe like not his level, but top 10, top 15, and then you got another guy who's like top 20, and, you know, they can meld their skills, it does help a lot. And it's very elementary. Obviously, every team's a little different. But, you know, if you squint at most champions, that's kind of how the archetypes kind of play out. So, obviously, GMs try to just cut and paste, cookie cutter it. That's what they try to go with. I really think it's two, and then, like you said, that third guy kind of fits in. The Nuggets are just two with, you know, everybody else kind of filling in. But, yeah, that's star power matters in the playoffs, right? You want to have the best two or three players in the series or, like, you know, three of the top five players in the series, and that gives you an edge. So, yeah, and like you said, the Bucks are kind of bucking that right now because they, at any given moment, you'd say they probably have the, you know, two of the top three players on the court, and they're just leaking everywhere else. The pieces don't fit.
Yeah, and I guess one of the, you know, if we're sticking in the Eastern Conference, Cleveland hasn't really gone that route. I mean, when I look at Cleveland's roster, you just look at their starting five. I like it, right? I like Jared Allen. I like Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland. I like that group. But that group doesn't fit that mold, James. They have a guy that is in Donovan Mitchell. I've always felt, even when he was in Utah, you were talking about a volume scorer, but they have nice pieces that fit. This is why Cleveland has moved up. This is not a team that has a big three. This is a well-rounded unit.
I totally agree. They got two guys. Well, in a way, if you squint, again, like Donovan Mitchell can operate as a superstar scorer. I don't think he's a top maybe 10 player, but he's definitely right on the borderline, right, at times. We've seen explosive scoring. Darius Garland was an all-star, and Jared Allen was an all-star. You know, we know they have decent players around them. They got Strus as a shooter, but that's why I'm not too terrified of them, because we saw them get kind of pushed around by the Knicks last year in the playoffs. Physicality can take them out of their rhythm. They got such a small backcourt, and I think on the wings, no one's really worried too much about who they got. So. I'm not too concerned about it, but yes, they're success is success. Kudos to them for this nice little regular season run they're on. Maybe they learned from last year and they come with a different level of toughness. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Let's end with this team that is struggling right now outside of the top 10 in the Eastern Conference, the Brooklyn Nets. They have fired head coach Jacques Vaughn. They made this official today. I thought it was really, really odd the way Jacques Vaughn got this job to begin with, 2+ seasons. He does have a winning record. He's 71-68 in the regular season. However, in the postseason, 0-8. Replace Steve Nash. That was just a complete dumpster fire all the way through and through. When you look at what's going on in Brooklyn right now, to me, James, correct me if I'm wrong. Tell me I'm not looking at this correctly. I see an organization with absolutely no track, no vision. This is an organization that is completely stuck in the mud. And if you're a Nets fan, I don't think it gets better anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree, man. I feel like they keep just changing course kind of almost on a whim. And I like Bridges. I like some of the pieces they have there. They could help a lot of other teams. If you somehow could land a guy like Kevin Durant, they'd probably look really good around him. But that's just, you know, obviously we know the story how it went. I'm not sure exactly what ownership is doing. Honestly, man, I don't know. Maybe the whole trade that gave up Tatum and Brown kind of broke their brains. And I think ownership is, like you said, somebody they swing wildly. They hold on to guys when they probably shouldn't. They trade guys when they, you know, it's been a mess. It's been an absolute mess, and I'm not sure what the fix is, but as a fan base, I think they kind of do deserve better, right? Not the players' fault. They just haven't been good enough. They haven't brought in the right players. The coaching situation has been an absolute joke. I don't know why I know, Jacques Vaughn wasn't supposed to be the guy, but then he's your guy. So why do you fire him now? I don't understand, right? The team just isn't good. It's not his fault.
No. And when you talk about swinging for the fences, this is something with this Nets organization that goes back to the time that they landed Deron Williams from the Jazz. You can then transition into the deal that they made with the Celtics, right? I mean, this is an organization now, for the better part of 15 years, they have swung and they have missed.
Absolutely. And, like, some of the things, obviously, look, the Kevin Durant, Kyrie thing, 10 times out of 10, almost any GM does that.
100%, yep.
You want to bring them in, but they don't put a strong enough front office and a savvy enough front office around them to build the way it meant to, and they gave KD and Kyrie way too much power and way too much sway in that organization. First, they brought in a guy with no coaching experience, basically, with Steve Nash. That didn't make any sense. They're bringing in a veteran, strong coach. So it's almost like the idea of things are good, but the execution has been horrible over the last, you know, however many years. Like, they have the best intentions, but you know what they say about the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? And I think right now Nets fans are marching down to hell.
He's James Holas. He's kind enough to join us each week as we talk NBA basketball. Again, about 26 games left in the regular season. Everything counts. It multiplies, it seems like, from here on out. James, as always, a pleasure to get you on. And I know you're always really active on social media. You guys got the podcast dropping?
No, I think we're shelving it indefinitely, man. Life is just too hectic. And we're both too lazy. And I get all my good takes out on your show.
That's all right. You can use our show for any takes you want, James. I always appreciate the time. Give us the Twitter handle, at least.
And homage to the great player, Scottie Pippen. You can find me at Snotty Drippin. So, like Scottie, don't spell it like Snotty Nose, like Scottie, but with the N. Snotty Drippin, where I harass you and I try to provoke Lakers fans. And I'm actually kind of bummed because the Lakers have been playing so well lately, so I can't even... I can't even enjoy the Schadenfreude. So
yeah, it's been quiet, but that's okay. That's okay.
I gotta shut up. Hey, I tip my hat with credit where credit's due.
James, always a pleasure to get you on. We'll do it again next week. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Again, a brand new week of the show live from the Sutherland Studios. We're back after this.